It's good to be here again, brethren. All is working in order, I guess, with the sound. Good to hear. I definitely want to be able to record these because I need to go back at some point and listen through these particular ones that I've given because I want to write either a series of articles or maybe redo parts of our Ten Commandments booklet. So I did want to get back to the subject of the Ten Commandments. It's been a while since I've been able to get back on this subject, and I'm very grateful to do that. And also, it's good because maybe for the Hazletons, they won't feel like they've been gone so long. We're just back into where they, you know, they because it was well before they left that we were on this subject, so it won't seem like we've covered much ground in between. I mean, we have, but you know what I mean. Anyway, I did want to get back to this subject because I think it's very important. Getting to the Ten Commandments as understanding them as broad categories. And I want to just for mention briefly, and I don't want to take a lot of time to review because if I do that, then I won't get very far in this one. We have already gotten up through the Seventh Commandment. So we've covered, I think in one, we did first three, and then we had the Fourth Commandment, and then the Fifth and Sixth, and then the Seventh. I'm not sure exactly. I know there was a lot of review in there, too, so that's also partly why we haven't gotten as far as maybe I would like to. But at the same time, I think it's very good to take a lot of time with each of these commandments because, as we find out, they're very broad. They say a lot. They have much more to say than we might think just in a cursory reading of the simple letter of the statement. And I'd like you to turn over to Psalm 119. And we go here every time, but it's good to just remember why we're covering this. And also, part of the idea behind this is that we've got what I consider a heresy, although it's also kind of just not a correct way of looking at it. It depends on what's done with it. I mean, some people basically try to throw out the commandments with the argument that the commandments are this bare minimal standard of righteousness and that what Christ demanded was so much more than them. In other words, that we have this whole new set of commandments of the New Testament and basically the Old Testament commandments, especially the Ten Commandments, are inadequate somehow and that we can just kind of throw those aside. We don't really need those. But of course, we know that Paul told Timothy, you know, he said from childhood, you've known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation. He wasn't talking about the New Testament. He was talking about the Old Testament. These principles were there. They were understood. All the things leading to salvation, these principles were there early on. They were there from the get-go. They were there from the Garden of Eden. And they led all through the New Testament. God gave them further explanations of these things and reaffirmed things to people and let them know what the truth was. And what is the truth about the Ten Commandments? Are they this bare, minimal standard that we can just say, well, that's nothing really. We need to do all these other things. David said in Psalm 119, and we see it in verse 96, he said, I have seen the consummation of all perfection. I mean, that statement right there, you say, what is he talking about? This is the all. The consummation of all perfection. I mean, that's what he's talking about here. What is all summed up if we think, what does it mean when people come to the perfect life? The consummation, the full absolute expression of it in totality of all perfection of everything. And then he says, but your commandments, or not even but, I mean, this is really, the but is in italics. I mean, what we're really saying is, because some people are trying to contrast this, I don't really believe there's a contrast here. What he's saying is, I've seen the consummation of all perfection. Your commandment is exceedingly broad. I mean, what he's saying, I believe, in this statement is that God's commandments contain it all. If you look at what God gives as the command and see all of it, every command, in fact, and look at all of its ramifications and what it all implies beyond what it just directly states, And implication is a great deal of what's important here. We have to understand the spirit of the commandments, not just what's stated, but what's intended. Because the commandments were never to be understood as simply these little rote letter statements. They were always meant to be understood in context and as to what they implied. And isn't that true of all communication? If you make a statement to somebody and they just try to take just the very specific letter of your statement and run with that and ignore what you meant, if it was clear what you meant, isn't that what's intended? The meaning behind it is what's intended. What was always meant to convey, that is usually grasped when we're talking to somebody. And when God gave his commandments, that was grasped. And think about the commandments. Each one wasn't even in isolation. It was in context of all the other commandments. And it was in context of his whole revelation that he had been giving to them, the things he was doing for them, the other things he had been telling them. It was in context. Well, does that mean we need this whole body of law beyond the Ten Commandments? Well, in some ways, we need a fuller expression, and we have that in the Scriptures, and God has given that to us. He's given us a voluminous word. It's a huge amount of text in the Scriptures, things that we can't even understand over our whole lifetime, that we go back to again and again to learn more and more about, to understand the depth, the breadth of these commands. But he also said when he gave these commands in Deuteronomy verse 5, he said he gave these Ten Commandments, and at the end it says, and he added no more. Because they were complete. They summed up the responsibility of man. And we see that over in Ecclesiastes 12, and I'll have you turn there too, because that is that ties right in with this. Ecclesiastes 12, as it comes to the whole conclusion of the matter, and what is the conclusion of the matter as you look at life and all of its pursuits and the vanities that mankind goes through, and what is mankind's responsibility ultimately come down to? Verse 13 of Ecclesiastes 12:13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. And brethren, this is the conclusion of the whole matter of all of the Bible, frankly. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. The King James says this is the whole duty of man. But really the literal here is this is man's all. Remember, we just saw this, the consummation of all perfection. The commandment is exceedingly broad. Fear God, that's a proper attitude toward God, and that's how we take the commandments. And keep his commandments, for this is man's all. So if we look at God's commandments with the right attitude, we are going to have everything we need leading us to salvation. So that is it's inspirational to understand that, of how fundamental these principles are and how much we can gain just from the commandments. And that's why we're spending so much time going through them. Well, I'd like you to turn over to Exodus 20. And of course, that's where the commandments were spoken by God at Mount Sinai. And we'll hold our place here because in case we get to the next commandments, we're going to be starting today with commandment number 8. Of course, we went through the broad spirit of the others. I won't go through that all right now. Can review that at some time. I probably will summarize them all again at the end. But I want to get into right away into the 8th commandment so that we can make sure that we get that one covered, and maybe 9th and maybe 10th. I'm thinking that we won't get to 10, but we might. We'll see how far we get here. But the 8th commandment is expressed in Exodus 20 and verse 15. You shall not steal. You shall not steal. The 8th commandment safeguards everyone's right to legitimately acquire and own property. Of course, that's within the overall understanding that God maintains seminal ownership over the entire universe and everything in it. So God is really the owner of all things in an ultimate fundamental sense. But he's committed ownership to his children, to those he's created, to human beings. And he wants them to enjoy private property and be able to exercise their own authority over a certain given sphere. And that is theirs by right, And it is not someone else's right to infringe on that. That's important. That implies a great deal as well. Again, there are many things about the commandments we look about. Individual rights are expressed in the commandments of God. We think about a bill of rights, but the commandments themselves give a bill of rights to human beings. Because in telling people what not to do, it's telling people that other people, God has given them certain freedoms that should not be infringed on, like the right to life, liberty, and property. These elements are in the commandments of God. We're not allowed to take someone else's life, of our own will. That's told to us in the sixth commandment. We're not allowed to deny people liberty, their freedoms. That's in the various other commandments, including the Sabbath commandment, which tells us not to oppress, but to give freedom, especially when it comes to the observance of the Sabbath and to worshiping God. And then also we are to give people and protect the right of property, of ownership. The command also implies God's sovereignty and ownership. Because think about it. It's not just some guy saying, well, here's what I think. It's not just some guy on the sideline saying, well, I think it should be this way. No, God is issuing the commands as one in authority to issue the commands. He's able to say to you, you shall not steal. Well, what right does he have to say that? He has all the right. He is the maker of all things. He is the maker of you and of me. He is the maker of everyone. And because of that, by virtue of being the creator, everything is his to command. And that is implied. That's not stated in the commandments. The commandments don't state that. But just by virtue of his giving them implies that. And that's another point I want us to, always when we see the commandments, let's think about not only what they directly say, but of all that they imply, which is, again, very, very broad. God wants the right of people to have private property honored and protected. You know, we can't just go and take something that belongs to someone else. It has to do with, that's their sphere of control and responsibility, and we are not to infringe on that. Borrowing without permission. Oh, I'm going to just take this. That's not allowed because it's not yours to do with if it doesn't belong to you. You have to get permission from the person who it does belong to. That again, though, is within the context of the broader spirit of God's law, because there are occasions where you might borrow without permission. There are occasions where you might take something, and it would not violate this commandment in the spirit, although it might in the technical letter of the commandment. And a perfect example is this. If someone is drowning, for instance, there's someone who you come across and you see that person is drowning, and you see a life preserver or anything, frankly. You see something that you could use to reach somebody and get them safely to shore. Or a boat. Maybe you see a boat sitting there and somebody's out far and you need to grab that boat and take it. Even if it would result in the destruction of the boat or the destruction of the device that you were taking, and you think, well, that belongs to somebody else, I can't take it. But that's not true, brethren. In that circumstance, we have to look at the broad spirit of the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments do not exist in isolation. And one of the commandments says you shall not murder, of course, you shall not take life, but the broad spirit behind that is that we are to protect human life. It is very valuable. It is what God intended. And because of that, we say we have to balance these elements and say, this person's life is in danger. What can I do? What I have to do in this case is take what does not belong to me to save that person. Is that allowed? Of course it's allowed, and it's allowed under the law of the land too. I mean, this is just universally agreed to, that this is known and understood. That's what you do. Because which is the greater issue? Is it this technicality of saving someone's property? What's of more value, the thing or the person? the person is of greater value, and the commandments themselves embrace that spirit. Jesus himself pointed out examples of this when people were condemning him for doing certain things on the Sabbath. And he's trying to say, what's more important here? What's the most important thing? And he told them, well, you'll get an ox out of the ditch on the Sabbath. You know, you're not going to help this person, which is of what's more value? You know, the person or the animal. The person was actually more value than the animal. But clearly the animal was of value enough that you should even get the animal out of the ditch on the Sabbath. The problem comes is if we live our lives in a way that puts oxes in the ditch, we don't want to do that. But if we encounter that, or if that's we're dealing with a situation like that, we actually can work on the Sabbath to free this ox, which is really more about safeguarding somebody else's property in that case and their livelihood than actually it probably is about the life of the ox. But the life of the ox is valuable too. It might not necessarily die there, but it's comfort and situation that we can do what we can to alleviate these things as we encounter them. But again, it doesn't mean our lives are set up in a way that means we're in constant violation of the technical letter of the law. But it's an important principle of the commandments to consider this idea of what is the spirit, what is the intent, and we look at that in every situation we encounter. Now, stealing is rooted. That's real stealing we're talking about. What I just described to you is not stealing. You got a runaway. By the way, we had an Adam alert in Walmart the other day. He actually took off and Donna couldn't find him, and then they shut down the store, and it's just kind of crazy. I guess he finally found him, but he's a runner right now, so that's something we have to be watching for. Anyway, back to the message. The situation I just described to you. Whereas if you took something that didn't belong to you to save someone's life, that is not stealing in the sense of what stealing is. That is, it may be technically stealing in the sense of taking something that doesn't belong to you without permission. But it is not at all the concept of the spirit of stealing, of what stealing is. Stealing has to do with self-will. And in fact, stealing is rooted in covetousness, which is a violation of the 10th commandment. We'll get to that, how these commandments overlap. But stealing is a violation of covetousness. You want something that you can't legally obtain, and you take it. So where does the action come from? The action comes from the attitude. The attitude is underlying what is done. In the New Testament, we're given a fuller expression of this commandment, we can turn over to that in Ephesians 4. I'd like you to look over there. And it's fascinating to read this command, the way that this is worded here by the Apostle Paul in connection with the 8th commandment. Because this is where we give rise to this whole notion that the commandments are this minimal standard. And in the New Testament under Christ, and we have other commandments. We have a fuller commandment given by Christ or his apostles that really tell us how to live. And so we see this here in Ephesians 4:28. There's a problem with that idea, though, and I'm going to get to it in a second. But I'm going to show you the thinking here. So we come to Ephesians 4, verse 28. It says, "Let him who stole steal no longer." And we think, well, that seems like a repetition of the 8th commandment, you shall not steal. But it's even saying more than that. It's if you were stealing, stop doing it. "But rather, let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need." Okay, there's a lot in this statement. But one thing I want to point out is that some people will look at this again and say, see, the 8th commandment didn't say any of this stuff. And therefore, we have this revelation in the New Testament that is basically a set of new commandments, a set of new rules for what we're to do, that we are to work with our hands, that we're to labor to gain and therefore to give to others in need. And that is the real spiritual commandment, and that the eighth commandment, as given in the Old Testament, never intended all of this. Well, that is false. That is not the right way to look at this. True, we have a fuller expression given here, but we need to understand that the eighth commandment always meant all of this. That's what we need to understand. It may be difficult to see that at times, but again, when we put them in context of the whole rest of the Ten Commandments and in the fuller context of God's giving them and what he was doing for the people at that time and what he was calling on the people to do for one another, this responsibility was always there. I mean, think, it went back to the Garden of Eden, you know, when Cain asked, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Well, he knew, he should have known better. He was. All along he was. And the commandments show that. You know, Paul, in expressing the commandments, he says, in fact, I would like you to hold your place here, and I'm going to show you this, because over in Romans, he says in Romans 13, I'm sorry, Romans, I'm in the wrong chapter. Get there. Didn't have this one in my notes, but it just occurs to me that as something to point this out. In Romans 13, verse 8. And actually before this, he had been saying, render to all their due, you know, tax to whom taxes, custom to custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. That includes respect to whom respect, respecting people's property, for instance. And he says, verse 8, owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet, and if there is any other commandment, all are summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, which was also a statement from the Old Testament. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment or the fulfilling of the law. But what I want us to notice here is that each of these commandments was supporting the general concept of you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So if we think about you shall not steal in that context, if we love our neighbor as ourselves, the same care that we want, that we show others is what we want shown to us. What do we want shown to us? We want shown to us that people would help us when we're in need. And so we need to help them when we're in need. Not steal from them, but we need to do the opposite and go further beyond in the other way. That was the whole point always of these commandments. And we look back at Ephesians 4 where we just were. Paul is making this statement that, that we are to labor and work. You know, we may not think that that is necessarily part of the concept of stealing. But let's think about this in the context of the other commandments. Remember what the fourth commandment said. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. The seventh day is the Sabbath. Well, implicit in that is the fact that we should be laboring and working. We should be producing. We should be creating. God put us here to be like Him. And He is one who creates and produces. He isn't just a mooch off of everything. And He doesn't want us to be either. We are to produce and help. Now, we may be in need. I mean, that's the whole point He's saying here. He wants us to help others in need. So it's not wrong to be in need. But it's wrong to make ourselves in need by not doing what we are supposed to be doing and being a burden. We have to make sure that we do what we can. But then when we can't, He's there to care for us, and other people are too, and we are to be part of that just like He is to care for others. This is all implicit in the commandments. I'd like you to turn back to the Old Testament over to Leviticus 19 and see a few other elements of this which come into play here. In Leviticus 19, we see some interesting statements in verses 35 through 37. He says, you shall do no injustice in judgment. That's one thing. You think, well, that's certainly a valid point. We want to be right in the way justice is meted out or in the way we judge. But beyond that, it says, you should do injustice in judgment in measurement of length, weight, or volume. If you can do injustice in these things, that means go out of line from what is right. You shall have honest scales, honest weights, an honest ephah, and honest hin. The word honest has to do with truthfulness, and we heard about that earlier. We're going to talk about that a little bit more because I think that I really appreciate that from Mr. Barnett. The idea of getting at the truth of things, at what is underlying and how we get at that. And the dishonesty that we see around us in the advertising world, for instance, and in the, and we'll talk about that in a second, but also in the in just the way things are shown and billed. If something's presented to you and it's, well, this is a pound of something and it's not really a pound, then it's false. It's a lie. So that's another commandment issue, but it's clearly part of this one too. Because then you're stealing. You're not exchanging value for value. You've denied what is accepted and right. You've done injustice. You're taking from somebody else. God actually says over, and hold your place here in Leviticus 19, which we'll come back in just a second. But if you look over at Proverbs 11, Proverbs 11, verse 1, God says, dishonest scales are an abomination. An abomination, an abhorrence to the Lord. But a just weight is His delight. Does the commandment really say that? Well, it doesn't say it. But again, it's part of what's implied by the giving of the command, of the law, of the eighth commandment. We're not to steal from others. We're to make sure everything is on the level. We're to make sure that everybody has a fair basis for trade and exchange. If we get rid of that fair basis for trade and exchange, we're doing two things. We're being dishonest, we're lying, and we are stealing. We are lying for the purpose of stealing. These things go hand in hand. I mean, these violations of the commands, it's interesting how they overlap multiple commands, and they certainly do. In fact, ultimately, they overlap all the commands because every command bears on the others, and in the deep spirit of each command embraces the whole. I'd like you to go back over, if you will, to chapter 19 of Leviticus, Leviticus 19. So directly taking another's possessions isn't the only way to steal. You know, con artists use sophisticated scams to swindle victims. Again, they're lying, they're being dishonest, but they're doing it for the purpose of stealing. They're violating multiple commands here. Deceptive advertising does the same. Manufacturers who misleadingly advertise their products that are actually of substandard quality, they cheat the customers. They're lying and they are stealing. And of course these go together, and we see God putting these together in the way He structured the Ten Commandments, because it's right there in them, but it's also in other statements. Here in Leviticus 19, verse 11, He says, "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another." Just wrap it all up in one right there. You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. This is not to be done. And a lot of times these things come together in concert with one another. And so he's calling us out on that to make sure that we do not go that way. Laborers who bill for more hours than they work, or charge more than their services are worth, are stealing from those who hire them. Because it's misrepresenting what they're doing. And it goes to an agreement. If you strike an agreement with somebody, it has to do with keeping faith. Remember we talked about in the issue of adultery, the real issue there had to do with keeping faith and not violating our word and what we had agreed to. People borrow, not only without permission, but some people borrow with permission, and then they never return what they borrowed. And that's stealing. if the understanding is that they would return. Now, we forgive people if, you know, Christ said if somebody borrows and they keep needing to borrow. I mean, we have to be forgiving people. But it doesn't make it right. There are so many ways to take what's ours, and we must stay on guard. We could be breaking God's commandment against stealing without realizing what we're doing. Maybe doing that in various activities of life. Employees who don't work, even if they're paid to do so, are stealing from the employers. People who delight in consuming what others produce while refusing to carry their share of labor and responsibility or their part in production of goods and services, that's another form of stealing. It comes down to what an agreement is. You make an agreement, you're going to do this for that. And that's where it really comes down to. But implied in our responsibilities before God, again, are to be productive people that engage in trade and commerce of some fashion. That doesn't mean that it has to do with interacting in the society, doing something of worth. Of course, you can have an employer that steals. Verse 13 of Leviticus 19, you shall not cheat your neighbor nor rob him. The wages of him who is hired shall not remain with you all night until morning. Now, we have to understand this in context, because does that mean that today we have to pay, you know, our laborers every day? It doesn't mean that. This had to do with an agreement. The way it worked then was, here you hire this guy to do some work, and that's what you're going to pay him, and he understands he's going to be provided something by doing that. You don't not pay him when he was expecting to be paid. There's an expectation of payment. There's a schedule for payment. Today we may be paid every 2 weeks for instance, at a job. The key is that it's an agreement. And if you break that, you're lying. So again, we see how lying and stealing overlap one another. We have to, if we agree to the terms of payment, we need to meet those terms. Otherwise, we are violating the commandment against stealing, and we are violating God's commands against lying. But back to this whole idea of people who are not producing and not doing anything, but are simply sort of being a mooch off society in that sense. Maybe we attribute that to laziness. Okay, well, laziness is, in a way, stealing. God condemns laziness in the Bible. We're not to be idle and lazy. Doesn't mean we can't take a break or rest. Of course we can. We need to recharge at times. But if we are just a layabout and never contribute to the betterment of the world around us, we are not fulfilling the commandments of God, including we are stealing, sapping energy away from the world around us, from society, from other people. We are a drain on them without being a spring of life to them. We are to be a spring of life as much as we are able to be. If we are in need beyond our control, then others have a duty to help us. But we have a duty to help them and to provide and produce. You know, I find it very interesting. And by the way, laziness also goes to covetousness, because it has to do with selfishness and you desire all the benefits of being alive and living in society without doing anything for that reason, you know, without doing nothing. These are all violations of God's law. I find it interesting in the New Testament, the parable that Jesus gave about where he told these servants they were to be investing while he was gone. And then he came back, and the one guy had just put the money in the ground, it says. And he said, well, because I was afraid, you know, you were an austere man and I wouldn't be able to necessarily do what you wanted here. So I just hid it away so you could have it back. And he said, you wicked and unprofitable servant. Being unprofitable is wickedness, according to God. And he also said that in a way he was saying, he said, at least you should have put my money in the bank so that when I came back, I could have got it back with interest. Think about that. He was wicked for not doing that. He was wicked for not doing that. That it sounds very strange to us in our thinking because we think, wow, so I got to put money in the bank to gain interest? This is a principle. I mean, we're not talking about that's the specific thing you have to do. But what he was talking about was you were given certain things to do something with them, not to just sit on them and do nothing. You had to use those things for some greater benefit and good. Because you didn't do that, that was wickedness. And that's the way we should look at all life, and actually this bears directly on the eighth commandment. If we don't do that with what we have even, we think, well, these things belong to me. Yes, they do. But they're to be used in a certain way, otherwise we're ultimately stealing ultimately from God and from all the rest of mankind. Because we are not using the things that we've been given for the right purposes. We are not using them at all. We're using them to, and it ends up hurting the whole. Our talents are what we're really talking about here. And of course, they are for God's purposes and to serve others. And if we don't do that, we're stealing our talents. We're stealing what we've been given. We're stealing our property. We're stealing everything. If you have something to give, somebody's in need and you have it and you don't give it to them, that involves a theft. Now you say, well, that person has no actual right to it. And it's a technical sense, they don't. Because they can't come and just take it from you without asking you. But in an overarching sense of what God says is the right thing to do, you have a responsibility to help those in need. And if you don't, then you are withholding good. And then the withholding of the good that should be bestowed upon them is violating the spirit of this commandment against stealing. It's an interesting way to look at life because, of course, I want us to be clear. Those who are in need can't just simply go and take and think it's okay to take what I don't have. We need to get permission. But of course, we're not going to condemn that either. There may be somebody that's starving, and if they take some food to stay alive, you know, intending that they may pay it at some point in life, we should not judge that harshly. We understand. And God does too. He talks about that very specific thing in the Bible. That's not as bad as certain other things because we're trying to, in that case, preserve our own lives. But we have to be careful in that kind of application of these commands because we can get on a slippery slope and think, well, I can do anything that's for my good. It doesn't matter if I take from others. That's false. We have to respect ownership and property. But we also have to be concerned with broader principles and what God wants for each of us and from each of us. Malachi 3, and of course this is one we often talk about when we go to the concept of stealing. Malachi 3, of course, gives us the issue of tithing. God tells us that we're to be tithing, you know, 10% of our income to Him. And if we don't, what does he say that is? Malachi 3, verses 8 and 9, he complained to the people of Israel, will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. You have robbed me, God says. But they have stolen from God, in other words. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? He says, in tithes and offerings. Notice that. That's kind of what I wanted to get at with even the other concept. You think, wait a minute. This money is money that truly belongs not to us, but it belongs to God. We're supposed to give it back to Him. We have a duty. It's within our possession and control, but God demands it in payment to Him. And if we don't pay it to Him, we're stealing from Him. But it's more than just that, because this is a whole issue of the way our productive lives go. We have sort of a working agreement with God. God is the owner of all things. He is the producer of all wealth. He's the creator of all wealth, and therefore he is the one who has ownership over all wealth. So everything that we gain, in fact, he owns us. He made us. So anything that we produce is ultimately, in an overarching seminal sense, his. So if we create and produce, everything belongs to him. But he allows us private ownership. He allows us private control over the things that we have. But only under these certain terms. So he says part of these terms are tithing. We have to tithe for this financial partnership with God to work out. And if we don't follow the terms of that partnership, then the whole thing is revoked. And what I'm saying is this, and we often don't think about it this way, but we should. All that we have belongs to God. Everything. And you think, well, I don't, and you don't say you don't tithe. You think, well, if I don't tithe, I'm stealing that tithe money from God. That's not true. That is true, I'm sorry, but there's more to it than that. You're stealing all of it from God. Because that money really doesn't belong to you until you fulfilled the terms of this agreement. If you don't tithe to God, which is our first duty of financial stewardship, then the rest of what you have is not free. It's not unencumbered. It's all encumbered by this thing that you're failing to do. And therefore, you are in a position where not only are you're stealing everything from God. You're just living a life of theft from the Creator God and not fulfilling the terms of obedience and responsibility that you have to Him. That's the way we... In fact, all disobedience comes down to a theft of ourselves, a misuse of ourselves for the wrong purposes. You ever think about that? That whenever you do wrong, you don't really have a right to do wrong. Because you actually think, well, we've been given free choice. Yes, we have. But God tells us the choice to make. And he has the right to tell us. And if we don't make the right choice, we've actually stolen ourselves away from his purposes. We've been stolen, all of us, by the devil, by the way. But we are cooperative in that. And so we are all thieves, like him, in all the wrong that we've done, whatever wrong it may be. It's very broad when we look about these things this way. And of course, there's many ways that we can see theft in our society and things that we need to avoid. Of course, government steals through excessive taxation, credit expansion, allowing this whole nonsense of fractional reserve banking, which is a giant fraud, by the way, an absolutely massive fraud of lies, to say that, well, you can borrow all this money that doesn't really exist. But then it sort of does exist in a make-believe world that lessens the value of all the money that is there. And it's an absolute travesty, because it violates all these principles about just weights and measures. It violates these principles about not deceiving and defrauding, and about stealing. It is absolute theft, and it goes back to covetousness. Inflating the currency. I mean, that's the whole, again, it falls into all these categories of lying and stealing. Socialism, communism is a system that is fundamentally thievery. Because, again, by its very purpose and nature, it actually is saying that private property doesn't really belong to you. It belongs to the state. It belongs to the whole. And that's false according to what God says. Because God says that, no, ultimately it all belongs to him, but he's given people the right of private ownership, and therefore that's what needs to be respected. And to have a system that denies that, and would say, you know, we have a right to demand this income or whatnot from you, that's theft. That's stealing. I won't say just the general principle of taxation by government is stealing, because there are certain services rendered that you just have that you pay for, and it's sort of an agreement part of for living within a society. But again, government encroachment and excessive taxation, this is absolutely stealing. But people, individuals who cheat on their taxes then, they are stealing. Because there is a certain right that the government has to impose taxation. And again, it's living in fraud if you deny what you owe under a system. Even if it's excessive, it can turn into fraud and lying. Of course, there's identity theft. That's very obvious. If people go around taking somebody's identity, that's lying, deception, but it's also stealing. As mentioned earlier in a previous message on murder, we were talking about the value of human life, kidnapping and slavery. These are thefts, obviously. We're stealing people. But that overlaps with devaluing human life. And if you stole somebody, if you kidnapped, I mean, that was a capital offense. Because that is absolutely equated with devaluing the human life, which equates to murder. You really, really need to put that in perspective. And on the another aspect that we want to make sure we understand when it comes to this command and how we follow it and obey it is the concept of restitution. Restitution. If you turn over to Exodus 22, and as I'm looking at it now, are we at 11:30? Maybe we'll only get through this commandment, which I didn't necessarily expect. There were several things I pointed out that I didn't plan to, so that's normally goes that way. That's okay. I think this is a valuable discussion to have, how important these commands are. But if we look over at Exodus 22. We could be stealing time if we go over time. That's very true. Although, we say that's right. Who does the time belong to and what do we be doing here? We have an allotted time, right? It's part of an agreement. Exodus 22 talks about issues of restitution. It says, and by the way, before I go to this, I should mention about time. Yes, time and use value. I mean, we think about that in the sense of there is a value of people's time, and we can steal time. We can steal time from other people in various and in many ways. We just have to make sure we don't do that. But anyway, in Exodus 22, we see this responsibility to make restitution. If a man, verse 1 of Exodus 22, steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it. Okay, so it's gone, right? I mean, he's not able to have it anymore. He should restore 5 oxen for an ox, 4 sheep for a sheep. So he's got to really go fourfold here. It's not enough just to give back what was taken. Why? Because you've done damages on levels beyond what was taken. You've caused problems to society. You've caused headache and heartache to those who've been stolen from. There's a certain pain and suffering that you've inflicted on people by stealing from them. You have to make it right. It's not just about restoring what was lost. And maybe they could have done something else with those things that would have increased their value, that you've now impaired the ability for that to happen. So you need to give them an increase. Because they might have been able to get an increase. It certainly wouldn't have been this big of an increase, probably. But that doesn't matter. Because you are going to leave them better than you found them. That's the way to make it right. We see something interesting here, though. It says, verse 2, if the thief is found breaking in and he's struck and dies, there's no guilt for bloodshed. which I guess is why in Florida they tell people, I think they have this thing, if somebody's breaking in your house, you need to, and you kill him, you need to drag him inside and say it happened inside or something. I mean, this is kind of, I mean, that's a fraud. We wouldn't do that. But in the Bible, I mean, that was the idea. If somebody's breaking in, they weren't going to be guilty of bloodshed. It says, if the sun has risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. So it's not like you could go and just find people and kill them. You need to go through a whole system of justice. But I want to get down to verse 4. If theft is found alive in his hand, whether it's an ox or donkey or sheep, he shall restore double. Well, that's interesting because we just saw earlier it mentioned fourfold or fivefold. Here it mentions double. See, here's the issue. If somebody came in and they started to grab your stuff, but they were stopped and they didn't really get it, and so you didn't lose it, in other words, or you barely lost it. It was right then you had it. Well, in that case, you weren't going to be able to make much gain with it, whatever it might be, but you had a certain pain and suffering inflicted on you. It had to be restored double. There had to be a double restoration. It wasn't enough, again, just to give back what was taken. But in the other situation, in verse 1, it's actually talking about if they steal the ox or sheep, and then it's slaughtered or stolen. So it's just out of the picture now. In that case, it requires a four or five-fold restoration, not just a double restoration. So there are degrees of what's required for restoration, depending on what exactly was done. This is part of God's system, too, is to realize, and by the way, these are general principles. When these matters were taken to the judges, they would levy penalties based on these concepts, but they would not necessarily be exactly these levied judgments because it would depend on a whole host of circumstances. But there are matters that get weighed. You weigh these principles and you make a judgment based upon them. And the idea, again, is that the punishment fits the crime, but also that the punishment is to make right. It's not just a matter of people suffering because of doing wrong. It's a matter of restoring wholeness and leaving things better than they were. That's our whole purpose for existence, is to make it better than it was before we were here. So if we've done damage, we need to not just undo. We can't necessarily undo. We need to do what we can to make things not only right, but to make them better than right. And what we have today in our system of justice is instead thieves go to prison. And they become a greater burden on the taxpayers of society. They actually end up costing more money in the prison system than they would if they were following this system of restitution and service. Maybe it could be like a community service. Somehow, they end up being a greater drain on society, and they end up being worse criminals. They actually learn to be worse criminals in the prison system. This is not a system that God intended. God's system may have involved temporary incarceration until people were judged, but really, the penalties at that time were fines, beatings, and death. People would, they would have to go through one of these things, or they might be imposed a fine, a restitution. If they did not pay it, if they refused, they'd meet worse consequences. They refused to do what the judges said, they'd find they were being they'd be executed, because it was important to keep these laws and order in society. Well, anyway, I just want us to see that the whole principle here behind the Eighth Commandment is not just that we don't take from somebody else what doesn't belong to us without asking. It's that our whole outward focus should be to make this whole world better. Because that's why God put us here. And it's to use what we have to serve Him and others. That's the spirit in which the Eighth Commandment was given. That was the whole point behind it. And if we understand that, then all the other that is required of the Eighth Commandment will flow from that. If you understand the whole point of it, the underlying reason, Everything can be evaluated on that basis. And it's important that we do. It's important that we live our lives obeying and honoring the Eighth Commandment. Not being a mooch on society. You know, we may think, oh, we're going to be, somebody might just be laid up in bed for a while, think they're going to take all these government benefits. That is not right. In fact, the whole concept of government benefits is a whole discussion in itself as to what we should be availing of ourselves of there. Certainly if we've been paying into a system for a long time, more than what we owe, I mean, there may be something we could draw back, but a lot of times that's not the way it works. It's just, well, government handles this, and so that's fine. But it's not necessarily the case, because we're aiding and abetting thievery. And we want to make sure that we don't do that. We want to make sure that we do what is right when it comes to what we have. Do with it as God desires us to do. And with that, I'll leave you, and we'll get through at least one more commandment next time.